हरिः ಗೌರಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ.
Bottom of 38. Śrīta Gosvāmī continued. Upon hearing of Krishna's arrival, Vasudeva, Akrura, Ugrasena, and Balaram, as well as Prajumna, Charudeshna, Samba, and the other sons of the Lord, abandoned their engagements of eating, sitting, or resting, and hastened to meet him. Keeping the brahmanas and elephants in front, the Lord's male relatives rode upon their chariots and were accompanied by the sounds of bugles and the chanting of the Vedic hymns. 16-18. Śrīla Prabhupāda explains, the Vedic way of receiving a great personality creates an atmosphere of respect, which is saturated with affection and veneration for the person received. Such a program is reception is full of sincerity on the part of both the receiver and the received. The process of reception, according to Vedic rites, is not at all dry. So here, as we see, is that Bhagavatam is now bringing out these finer aspects of the whole culture. Because generally in most other literatures, what's being explained is the technical points. Right? You know, what must be done and everything like that. But it's understood, because the Vedic principle is that there's no such thing as a do-it-yourself book. It's always a do-it-with-someone-else book. Right, it's never on your own. Right, you hear from guru, you hear from senior people, you hear from those that have understanding, have practice, have realization, like that. So that will be added, but the literature itself doesn't necessarily bring it out. It may mention something, but we see the Bhagavatam then is bringing out all these aspects, but it's not bringing it out from the material point of view, it's bringing it out because of its connection with devotional service. Right? This is something that we, you know, have to be able to make this distinction, that everything's perfect when it's connected to the Lord, and when it's not connected to the Lord, it's not perfect. The basic principle being, as was discussed before, the Lord is everything. He's pervading everything. He's in every atom, between every atom. Himself as super soul. And then his energies are what he's pervading. And his energies are non-different from him. So there's only Krishna. There isn't something else. There is no other substance. Right? In illusion, we think there's something else. So we think that you actually can think of other things. And then thinking of Krishna is also an option. Right? But the point is there's only Krishna. Right? So the Bhagavatam is bringing this out, but not just from the philosophical point of view. Right? That's being brought out. As we see in so far the prayers, it's all been just about how he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we'll generally see in the first 9 cantos, this is always applied. Right? Until we're very convinced of this. Then when we get to the 10th canto, then they're not going to speak like that. They will speak like that about the Supreme Lord. It's not that the Brajbasis don't speak about the Lord as the Supreme and all that. They just don't talk about Krishna as that Supreme. Right? They talk about Vishnu. They all worship Vishnu. Right? That's what makes sense. So, here is that the point Prabhupada is saying, it's not dry. The Western mind likes to make it dry. Dry, Western, here's the basic, you could say, is a generic, you know, kind of Western definition. Or modern, better to say modern definition, because, say, Western, the range of what you'd call Western is so wide. So, but modern is generally more narrow, right? You know, does that make sense? You know, smartphones, McDonald's, you know, we said organic supermarkets, you know, like that. You know, that's modern, okay? So, the idea is that in modern, is the Vedic is dry because there are rules that you have to follow. And the West is considered, you know, natural, spontaneous, you know, full of life. No, it's full of whim. The problem is that if you don't have life, your whim doesn't work. You actually have to be inspired to be whimsical and get away with it. Right? And how often do we see that? Okay, Huckleberry Finn's like that. You know, a few other characters of Mark Twain like that. You know, throw in a few people here from the 50s, you know, 60s like that. Now and again, you got something, a movie here and there has. Where are these people? So for most people, then it's called a rat race or just the rut. You understand? But if you talk to them about it, they're already doing something and it's not that nice and it's regulated, but this will be, oh, this will be bad. Yes. So it's a mentality, it's a misgiving that we have to be able to address. This idea that there's something less about the Vedic and something better about the modern, because it always gets better. Right? We learn from Shastra, it was better in Satya Yuga. Then a little less in Treta, a little less in Dwapar. In Kali, in the beginning, it's, you know, bad, and then it gets worse, and then it really gets worse. You know?
That's pretty much it.
Yeah. Is that, you know? But we're laboring under this conception that it's getting better all the time. You know?
Yes.
Like that. That's the problem. If you check, it's not, you know. It's not getting better.
It's like what Prabhupada says, it gets better for a few at the expense of
It gets better for a few at the expense of the others, but because those few are the ones that are running the show, therefore the advertising and everything, it's all like it's getting better. Right? You know, we're not talking conspiracies here. We're just talking people are just practically, you know, running their businesses and, you know, maintaining themselves. You know what I'm saying? That's, you know, how you say. Conspiracy is just another way of making money. Sells magazines, you know, you can have, you know, these, how do you call it? You know, these kind of get-together things, you know, you pay money and shows, you know, it's another way to make money. So, here is that it creates an atmosphere of respect, because if there's no respect, there are no relationships. There is no relationship that functions without respect. And we're talking about anything, even the closest friend, most intimate, there must be respect. When that respect goes, the quality of the relationship drops. Really? Does that make sense? That's the basic principle. So therefore, that must create an atmosphere of respect. So that's what these functions do. It gets focused. Well, who is he? Why is he there? Why are they worshiping him? Why is he special? But why is it about him? It's about the whole point of reception. It's about the interaction of personalities. That's what it's about. We happen to be in that position. You know what I'm saying? Yeah? That's the whole thing. So And so here it's saturated with affection and veneration for the person to see. Such a program of reception is full of sincerity on the part of both the receiver and the receive. That means both are attentive. Right? Both are attentive because it's a reciprocation. So therefore it's not at all dry. Dry means it's without the personal element.
Yes.
You know, but for us, without the personal element, that's standard. So then you throw in whimsical, now it becomes good. But the modern basically is just dry. You know what I'm saying? What means we can say this strongly because if we get into anything that we would say is not modern, you know, we'll say is, you know, older or, you know, what are the terms that they use for, you know, like local cultural kind of things. No. It's what people say about it. You know, you have some village, you know, some country has some customs or some, you know, group of individuals or some culture, you know, they have. You know what I'm saying? It's traditional, but there's words that don't... Ethnic, yeah. Ethnic. Now, ethnic can be looked at as good or not so good. It's not defined necessarily that it will be good, right? So, but the thing is we find in all the ethnic elements, it's more personal, more interactive, and more based on relationships than modern. Modern's based on getting it done, being practical, being professional. You know, it's all happening, moving forward, making profit, progressing, like that. Those kind of terms. Never personal, you know, interactive, based on relationships and this and that. They'll sprinkle a little bit of that in. But that's not at all. It's a decoration on the top, right? And you don't actually mix it in, you know? You know, it's just like you have the preparation, you sprinkle some coriander leaves on the top, but definitely you don't want to mix it in. You kind of take from the side, you know. You wouldn't want to get all that personal mush involved in your meeting or something, you know. Okay. The reception was made not simply by decorating the roads and streets as above mentioned, right? But by worshiping the Lord with requisite ingredients like incense, lamps, flowers, sweets, fruits, and other palatable eatables according to one's capacity. All were offered to the Lord, and the remnants of the foodstuff were distributed amongst the gathering citizens. So it was not like a dry reception of these modern days, right? People just together. It's nicely decorated. People talk. It's boring. And there's no food. You know, if there is some food, that would be the... Oh, I mean, on one side, that would be the better part. Because while they're talking all their boring stuff, you could be over there eating and talking to your friends, right? But they don't, because otherwise no one listens to the boring speeches, right? Yeah. Without distribution of food, no function is complete. And that is the way of Vedic culture. So everything is about food, right? Like that. And Prabhupada, is that here in this one? He mentions that everybody would be offering food. So every household is offering, and then they're distributing. So it means everybody's distributing prasad, right? You know, you're distributing prasad, and your neighbors, they're all distributing, so everybody's eating, you know? You know, and they're making enough to go around, not enough for five people, you know? It's not like that kind of... Okay. Yes.
So, but what is the system when somebody in this way to receive a great personality, but when there is no affection, not so much affection?
It'll be more dry. But as long as there's prasad, then it'll work out. You know, everybody will warm up at the prasad. You know, so the decoration, it's not affection, but at least it creates an atmosphere of respect. Then at least, if the respect is there, and the prasad is there, it works out like that. Then with time, these things will develop, you know, because it's understood is that they may not be so good at these things. So we think, oh, they take up, you know, time, or they're not so practical. You know, we could be doing other things at this time, but. Yes, you could be doing other these things at this time if varna is the prominent element. But since ashram's the prominent, the lifestyle's ashram, not varna. That's the mistake in the modern. Is if you say to someone, they'll all say yes, your lifestyle is more important. But the discussions are only about occupation, like that. The discussion is always about, you know, means the child has to get educated. What does that mean? He has to get educated, a skill, he'll get a job, he'll be able to maintain himself. No one talks about how his character will develop, getting experiences, doing all these different things. You know, it's just not part of the training. It's just not. It's not even a consideration. So it's shifted. You know, because lifestyle, what makes lifestyle work? It's actually following regulation. Regulation comes from Dharma. Dharma comes from the Lord. So as soon as you create this environment where religion's on its own and everything else is then separate, right? So then how does religion influence the lifestyle? Because it's not supposed to influence the occupation, but at least it should influence the lifestyle. But that's your own personal thing to do. There'll be no organized that. So then the quality goes down, because how many individuals are that good at organizing the whole thing? That's why in the past you had the leaders of society would organize it. That way then everybody got the benefit. So it gets lost. So that's why these organized things, they are of value. Because in other words, they're of value on the ashram side. You make profit on the ashram side, maybe not on the varna side. But the point is, varna is to support ashram. Okay, then continue. Hundreds of famous prostitutes, all beautifully decorated, proceeded upon various vehicles, for they were very eager to see the Lord. 19. The purport to 111.19 is especially well known among Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavatam purports. Here makes understandable to the modern reader a rather controversial aspect of the Vedic social order. Even the prostitutes were granted a degree of public respectability. Moreover, such women were often celebrated devotees of the Lord. His Divine Grace relates in his purport the narrative of Bilva Mangal Thakur and the beautiful courtesan Chintamani, who became the Thakur's Vartma Pradarsha Guru. Yeah. So in other words, they have their place in society. The point is that it's specific. Just like a carpenter, what does he do?
Carpets.
Yes, he carpets. Yes. And what does a carpenter do? He carpets. Okay. You know, in other words, he makes furniture, does things like that, makes windows. Does he do something else? Do you have to ask him advice on how to run your business? Or no. So in the same way, the society girls, they had their place in society. But that place belonged there. It didn't go outside of that. Does that make sense? That's the difficulty with the modern, is that there's no discrimination. It's either everybody basically acts like a prostitute, or they ban prostitution. Right, so the prostitutes can't act like prostitutes, but the common girl, she can. It's really, really weird, you know. So the whole point is there is a place. It keeps the society running perfectly if it's done nicely. Yes.
Maharaj, if Vedic culture is based on religious principles,
yes,
one of religious principles is not to abuse the sex. How can we reason that, you know, there's prostitutes in Vedic culture?
How many? I mean, it's just how you've been here some time and. You've been around the communities here and there, no? So you never heard of somebody running off with someone else's wife or all kinds of weirdo stuff going on?
I haven't been there long.
Okay. But, you know, you're around a lot. You hear now and again. Every couple of years you hear about it. So the idea of the prostitutes keep that from happening. That's the whole point. People can't control their senses. And better they don't control their senses with a prostitute than with someone else's wife.
Right.
You understand? So it's not meant for those who are cultured, it's meant for those who have a problem with the culture. You know? It's like the, the trip valve, you know, on a, what do you call it? You know? You have something, so keep it from exploding then, you know, like that. That's what it's for. But that's what I say, it has its particular place.
So it's always been existing in Vedic culture?
It's always been there. I mean, this is 5,000 years ago. So, you know, but we're also talking about they're on the courtesans, these ones. The ones in public are the courtesans, the ones that come out and all that, they're the courtesans. Other ones you may see, but they'll be up in the balconies and stuff. You know what I'm saying? So they're higher grade, they come out. So they're there at the social functions. You know, it's like at a social function, you always like ladies to come and escort people around, show where to sit, and, you know, give garlands or this and that, hand things out. That's what the courtesans do. Like that. Does that make sense? So unless you're running your own program, the husband with his wife or something like that, then if it's this big formal programs, they have the courtesans do that. You know what I'm saying? You have a formal program. There's some, you know, some dancing or, you know, some kind of formless show, that's the courtesans. You understand?
Mm. Yeah, it makes sense.
Like that. Your cultured ladies don't do these things in public. That's just the standard.
A place for everyone.
Yeah, so everybody has a place. That's the whole point. The Vedic is so broad. We're saying it's so narrow. It's so broad that the Western can't even accommodate this. You know, of course, unless you're in Amsterdam. Or that's enough. The temple in, I don't know if it still is, the temple in Amsterdam used to be right next to the red light district. You know, so I think on Sunday after the feast, they take all the prasad over and give it to the ladies. And then,
would they come and blow the conch?
No, they were just... they were busy, yes.
What's the difference, or if is there any difference between this courtesans and the concubines? Is it the same, or is it something different?
I can't, basically... It depends. It depends on what you're talking. But much of the time, as courtesans, they become concubines. And then when, you know, guy runs out of money, then they become courtesans again. You know what I'm saying? It is a business. So unless there's appropriate payment, there's not appropriate reciprocation. Like that. Does that make sense? I mean, so we're dealing with three levels of prostitutes here. The courtesans are on the top. They're the ones that do these big public things. They do. They have yajnas performed. They give in charity. They do a lot of public work because they get a lot of money. You know, so they're generally very religious and do a lot of religious activities like that. They're the ones that are famous. The ones you hear about. Then the next group is then...
Sorry, these courtesans are married to somebody or just...
No, generally not. Not on here. You know, on the higher planets they seem to be, but here not. But here, they're not. It's not that they won't get married, but if they get married, then they just become... They take up as just a regular lady in society. They don't perform those occupational duties anymore. So it has been known that these great courtesans have gotten married. And it's not a problem, because the great courtesans, then they're good at dealing properly with the person that they're with. Like of the five most chaste ladies in the universe, one of them is a courtesan. Right? Because whoever she's with, that's her husband. So while her occupation was going on, then one person died. So then she put on white and did everything as a widow, like that. Because you know, it means after they paid their money and gone, okay, then that's finished. But as long as it's there, it's as if she's dealing with her husband, like that. So they're kind of in a different category. Then you have the second group, that's, you know, based on the feminine charms and that, but it just doesn't have the greatness and grandness and the public element and all that. Then the third group, that's what we know nowadays generally as prostitutes. And what we call, let's say, like escorts and that would be like the second level. You know, in the West, that's considered the top level, but in the Vedic, that's the second level. Like in Japan, you have the geishas or geishas or whatever, how you say. That would be similar to the first level. You know, they're public, they're good in the arts, they can cook, they can do everything perfectly. That's why it says they come out dressed nicely, you know, so that it looks nice for the public. They're in their own category. Does that make sense? Concubines just means there's, you know, more ladies there than generally would be. But it depends. Generally speaking, those who are pious, they would be wives. They would be married. But whether, you know, someone like... Kumbhakarna, he had, I don't know if they were wives or a concubine, but he had ladies from every species of human life, right? So he had 400,000, you know, ladies, like that, you know, so it's a, so whether those were married or not, but then the thing is you have these elements called maidservants. So maidservants, they're connected to the queen, so they're connected to the king. So they might be married, but they might not. You know, so it's many of these things is very individual.
And then the kubja, what kind of category was
she? You get the idea from what it is that she would have been moved, she would have been in that first category. Like that. Because she became very beautiful, and so then she moved up in society. Like that. You get the idea she would have been in that first group. You'd have to look and see what term Prabhupada uses. But, you know, minimum second, but you get the idea it was the first group. Because they're quite famous. You hear about them quite regularly in the Vedic literatures. You know, we always hear about the ones from the heavenly planets. The Gandharvas, like that. You know, Urvasi and these others. So it's not that they don't get married for some time and this and that, but then when that's over, then they go back to what they are. You know, just here, if they get married, they remain like that. They would not be married. But the problem when you come from the heavenly planets and you're living for hundreds of thousands of years and the person you'd marry here lives for a little bit less time than that, then, you know, generally kind of runs out at some point. So that's why Urvasi told Arjuna, we don't work on the same rules that you work on Earth. You know? Because they don't apply. You know, you can't, you know, it's like man lives 100 years, woman lives 100 years, you have certain rules, but man lives 100 years, woman lives 100,000 years, then it changes a bit. Does that make sense? Kind of. There are numerous dramatists, singers, dancers, and learned speakers who desired to offer their respective talents for Krishna's pleasure. In his purport to 1.11.20, Srila Prabhupada glorifies the creative talents of Vedic civilization, the dramatists, artists, dancers, singers, historians, genealogists, orators, and so on, who are all classified as shudras in the Varnashram social system. No, the orators, I think he said the orators, the genealogists, historians, they're within the Brahminical. You'd have to check it like that. Because so here you're getting into the art side, but then there's the arts as practiced by the Brahmins, and then there's the arts as practiced by the Shudras. So we can see is the wide range what's here. You had the common citizens, you had the leaders of the society coming out, you know, the kings and the Brahmins and everything. You had the prostitutes coming out. You have all the artisans coming out. You have the Brahmins who specialize in these particular areas of social aspects. So we see it's a very wide range. The society is able to accommodate all these mentalities. Indeed, all of the citizens came out to greet Krishna, and in turn, the Lord offered each and every one of them due respect and honor. Right? Due respect according to their position and honor. We'll see when Prithvi Maharaj comes along. When he's entering into the kingdom, then it specifically mentions how he interacted with each kind of group of persons. So to do that, you have to be very conscious, very cultured, and very trained. You know, and the Lord's natural. But the point is you have to be conscious to be able to, whoever's interacting with you, to actually notice and be able to appropriately interact in that situation. So it's very special. It's not just, you know, yeah, anybody could do that. No, very few can do that.
Takes character.
Like many times, sometimes you'll see, it's rare, but you see it sometimes. When some great personality is coming, is being received, you know, like let's say the queen or someone else like this, then their reciprocation with those who are there, then sometimes you use the term graciously accepted. That meant they acknowledged it and reciprocated. Because otherwise they just come and, you know, nod a few heads and a little waving, you know, and that's it, and get in their car or get out. You know, it's not a whole lot happening. It's not interactive.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Right. Yes.
It appears that Brahmanas, unless it's a religious function, they're not very social class.
No. Because generally that's all they do. Because otherwise, what do they do? If they do have any social things, it will be more private. like they'll be the family gurus, so then they'll be involved in family activities in the way of, you know, any ceremonies or any kind of special occasions, you know, charity they're doing, Shraddha rites, anything. Did I say charity? Yeah, giving a charity. Then giving advice, you know, giving direction, like that. So they'll be there for that, but it'll be within the family, within the group, within the community. But prominent social, then generally not. It's not really the brahminical position, because unless it's something to do with shastra and, you know, that position of authority, teaching or ritual, then they generally don't have a whole lot to do with it. You know, on a minor scale, yes, means it's not that the Brahmin Grihastha doesn't have these kind of like needs and interaction, but it's much reduced. You know, like Prabhupada talks about the brahmachari, he'll have things and he'll be attached to his things, but the depth of that attachment and the range of that attachment is much less than the Grihastha. So it's easier to work with, you know, in the way of trying to give up that attachment. You know, more quickly you can, because you're working with less. The Grihastha then takes a longer period of time working with a wider range, but then, you know, he very nicely eradicates the whole thing. But so the same way, the Brahmins may be involved in the social, but on a smaller level. So it's less entanglement to be involved in, like that. You know, it's just natural. Well, kings, the bigger it is, the better. You know, Vaishyas also, the bigger it is, the better. The kings, it's more of just the position, the dignity, everybody's doing everything right, the respect. It's more of those qualities. With the Vaishya, much of the time, it's more for what he'll gain by being seen as either a popular person or a prominent person or a religious person, you know. So that kind of thing. So you see there'll be a difference like that. So then, yeah. Okay. The Lord thus greeted the various grades of persons by bowing his head, exchanging words, embracing, shaking hands, giving affectionate looks and smiles, and awarding assurances and benedictions. Okay, yeah. 21:23. As the Lord explains in Bhagavad Gita 4:11, as all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Right? So that was, he thus greeted the various grades of persons by all these methods. Everyone follows my path in all respects. Right? O son of Pita, that's another point. In all respects. So he's meaning that everyone. So even those who are atheistic, inimical, have nothing to do with the Vedic culture, they're still following Krishna's path in all respects. It's just which way they're going on the path. Yeah. O son of Pita. Oh, that's the end of that. Yeah, okay. O son of Prita, Srila Prabhupada writes in his Purana. 1:11:21:22. Yes, okay. Yes. The Supreme Lord, personality of Godhead, is neither impersonal nor an inert object, unable to reciprocate the feelings of his devotees. But in other words, he interacts, he does things. You know, it's just like, I think it was Ramses, he made a comment after the whole, Red Sea incident, right? Is that after coming back to his palace, then he made the comment to his ministers, Moses' God is God. Because he reciprocates. Well, his gods all stand around and nothing's going on. Like that, you know? So that's why he says not an inert object, right? Yeah. Right. Here the word yata vidhi, or just as it behooves, is significant. He reciprocates just as it behooves with his different types of admirers and devotees. Of course, the pure devotees are of one type only, because they have no other object for service but the Lord, and therefore the Lord also reciprocates with such pure devotees just as it behooves. Namely, he is always attentive to all the matters of his pure devotees. There are others who designate him as impersonal, so the Lord also does not take any personal interest. That's an interesting explanation. Huh? He satisfies everyone in terms of one's development of spiritual consciousness, and a sample of such reciprocation is exhibited here with his different welcomers. Right. To receive Lord Sri Krishna, there were all grades of population, beginning from Vasudeva, Ugrasena, and Gargamuni. So Vasudeva is his father, right? Ugrasena is the king of Dwarka, right? And head of the Vrishni line in which they're in, and Gargamuni is the, you know, the main priest, like that. The father, grandfather, and teacher, down to the prostitutes and chandalas, who are accustomed to eat dogs. And every one of them was properly greeted by the Lord in terms of rank and position. Now here it says, just on a side point, accustomed to eat dogs doesn't mean they exclusively eat dogs. It's whenever you can catch one. was properly greeted by the Lord in terms of rank and position. So that means even the chandalas had a way of interaction like that. Yes. As pure living entities, all are the separated parts and parcels of the Lord, and thus no one is alien to his eternal relationship. Such pure living entities are graded differently in terms of contamination of the modes of material nature. That's the gradation. It's not something else. Modern makes up these social positions, but it's not that. It's by the modes. But the Lord is equally affectionate to all his parts and parcels, despite material gradation. We can conclude that the conduct of the Dwarkavasis in this chapter is the purpose of human life. If we do not learn to see Krishna face to face, all else we see is illusion, as it is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita Chaturshloki. O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. Because we think it's darkness means it's separate from the Lord. So it appears that it's not connected to the Lord, but it actually... A person who is searching after the Supreme Absolute Truth, the personality of Godhead, must certainly search for it up to this, seeing Krishna face to face, in all circumstances, in all space and time, both directly and indirectly. As Lord Krishna passed along the public roads, accompanied by his elderly relatives and brahmanas, the ladies assembled on the roofs of the palaces to see him, for they considered these to be the greatest festival. So that's where all the ladies are, right? The ones that are down in public, that's the courtesans, right? And everybody else, they're there. So, but, you know, everybody has this spot. There's, right, does that make sense? Because if you're using shyness, then you want to have that the options of being able to, you know, be seen or not. So the prostitutes are not manifesting shyness, femininity, but not shyness, right? They use other aspects, you know, but generally the energy aspect, the attractiveness. Right? So the other ladies, then they're attractive, but that shyness is there. That's what controls it. So it has that other flavor. You know, so this idea of making everybody one, then that's, you know, where's the variety? We talk about, you know, the world, you know, how you say, village. But, you know, it's, the connotation is such is that all these varieties of cultural elements that enrich the human life is all blended together. But what it actually means is that we're just going to come in, put McDonald's everybody and wear, and make everybody exactly the same. That's the world village. Right? You understand? So that's the fun part is that whatever the Western says, it's actually application is much of the time the opposite. And whatever is thought about the Vedic culture, that it's not good in that way, is actually the opposite.
Mode of ignorance.
Yes. There's no difference between the festivities on the occasion of Krishna's entrance into Dwarka, as were observed about 5,000 years ago, and festivities in the temples of the Lord, as held generally. In his archer form, even today, the Lord can be seen by all in all Vaishnava temples. These forms will draw affection from every living being capable of giving affection. As the Lord drew affection from the residents of Dwarka, who saw him every day, Srila Prabhupada explains. Right? In other words, you have to be, you know, it's just like if you're sick and you eat and say, complain there's no taste, the problem's not the food.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Mark?
Yes.
What is it that makes one incapable of giving affection?
Um, could probably start with atheism. You know, throw in some reviling of the Vedas.
You know. Sprinkled with lust, anger, and greed.
Yeah, no, yeah. Basically, just lack of training, lack of exposure, lack of experience. But even that comes from desire. See, as you could say that, yes, that the person had a problem. His mother ate too many pretzels when he was small, so he's kind of like, you know, screwed up a bit. But the difficulty is he had the desire to be screwed up. Therefore, his mother ate too many pretzels. Right? Like, he could have been born in another family and didn't even know what a pretzel was. You know? So it does have all these connections. You know? But it doesn't mean that at any point one can't change that and take up devotional service. So therefore capable of giving affection. So in the beginning one may not have, but by attending these kind of things in the association of devotees who have, you gradually develop. That's just natural. But that's why the programs are there. Because otherwise, if it was a matter of when you have that affection that you could be involved in the pastimes, it might take a little longer. Right? So the archa form comes so that we can actually do what they're doing in Dwarka. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's like the elephant procession goes around. You know, as it goes by, then each group of devotees comes out, makes offerings and everything, offers their prayers. Does that make sense? And then, you know, some trap go along with him. The deity, you know, said Krishna was moving, then, you know, so many relatives that were moving with him. You know, so you have those who are standing watching, those who are moving with, those who are coming out. So all that opportunity is there. So the same facility is there. Does that make sense? That's why the festivals are there. Yes?
Just to that point of chandelas, I was thinking that the Dwarkavasis, their devotees, so it seems among them they're also chandelas.
Well, chandelas don't live in the city. They live outside the city. They come into the city to take care of. They do work in the day, but they don't come in when it's dark. So they can only come in once it's light, and they have to leave before it's dark. You know, just because being chandelas, you don't quite know exactly what they'll do. You know what I'm saying? They're a little bit more, you call, free spirits. You know? But they have valuable occupations, you know, that need to be done. So they come in, do those things, and go. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah.
When Maharaj Parikshit was dealing with Kali personified,
yes,
and he gave her the four places to reside, yes, she said, well, that doesn't exist now, so you have to give me another place. And then one of them was me eating, and then the other wasn't. So. So is it that it existed, but just not in a
It's very small.
Way?
Means, in other words, Kali, that element of Kali is always there, but it's just less, so there's hardly any place. But naturally, you know, it's his age, so he wants to do his thing. So he expands it.
More space.
Yeah, so, you know, he's always, you know, expanding his influence. You know, but the devotees are preaching and reducing it. Right? So this idea, oh, it's Kali Yuga, we don't need to follow these things. That's exactly what Kali Raj wants you to say and do. Exactly. It's like, you're his man. You know, that's what Prabhupada uses the term, Kali Chela. Chela means, you know, a boy who's, you know, someone who works for somebody submissive to him, you know. He's your man, he's your boy. So Kali Chela means one who works for Kali. Now, it's not necessarily that they are, know that they are, they're committed to it, but they become by talking in this way. It's Kali Yuga, we can't do these things. That's exactly what he wants. No, it's Lord Chaitanya's age also. So therefore, you know, do we say it's Lord Chaitanya's age, we should do what Lord Chaitanya says, or we should say we can't do what Lord Chaitanya says because it's Kali's age? Or we're not going to do what Kali wants because it's Chaitanya's age. So you choose your side. Yeah, you know, it's simple. It's all this. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Right. One may say, no, but I'm in the middle. I'm the middle road. But it means it's actually an illusory concept. You know, because the middle road, as such, is the razor's edge of devotional service. A pure devotional service. That's the middle road. Then everything to the right of that razor's edge That's Mayavad, and everything to the left of that razor's edge, that's Sahajya. So if you are on the middle path, then you're situated in pure devotional service. But if you're talking about these things in a more kind of, you know, liberal way, then generally that puts you on the left. You know what I'm saying? You know, and if you're overly, how you say, ritualistic without understanding the connection to Krishna, that puts you on the right. So it's not that there's this nice, wide, comfortable place in the middle that's not, you know, taken up by conservatives and liberals. No, you're one or the other, or you're devotee, you know, situated in devotional service. They're clear. They're not, it means we try to do it, make it, you know, broaden it and say, but you can, the point is it's called the snake oil. That's what the thing, you know, snake oil salesman, he's expert at speaking and making it sound fabulous. Everybody wants to be involved, but it's the snake oil because it doesn't do anything. You know what I'm saying? You know, they've been selling the snake oil, you know, prominently since the 60s. And what's it got? How is it improved? How is the social fabric better? So snake oil. So there's the razor's edge. Then there's unlimited to the right and left, you know. So, you know, you have right, really right, rabid right. You know, it just keeps going, you know, till you get around to you end up on the left again. Okay. The Lord being Kaivalya, one alone, there is no matter in him. He is one without a second, right? Because we're not one alone, because we're the soul and the body. Right? But he's not. The soul, him in his form, are all spiritual. He is one without a second, and therefore the Almighty Lord can appear in any form without being contaminated by the material conception. He doesn't need matter to take on forms. Therefore, festivities in the temple of the Lord, as held generally, are like festivals performed during the manifest days of the Lord of Dwarka about 5,000 years ago. Same principle, because what was going on then, Krishna is taking part in. What is the Yuga Dharma? Dwarka. Deity worship, right? So, therefore, deity worship is part of the Sankirtan movement, and one of the main aspects of the deity worship is the festivals.
Yeah.
Right? That's one of the things Lord Chaitanya took from Ramanujacharya. Right? Festivals and that association of devotees. Mm-hmm. Like that. So we see that these are important elements. So it's the same kind of thing. That's why the regulations are there. We see it's going through all these nice things and everything. So that's why there's so many steps. We call it rituals, but it's just culture. Right? That is just the way it works. The authorized acharyas who know the science perfectly install such temples of the Lord under regulative principles just to offer facilities to the common man. But persons who are less intelligent, without being conversant with the science, mistake this great attempt to be idol worship and poke their nose into that which they have no access. Right, so it's there. It says, such who know the science perfectly, right, not who has a, you know, that they've seen a copy of the Pancharatra Pradeep, you know, on the temple in the deity room, you know, Pujari room, but never even touched it, let alone read it. But they have an opinion. We're talking about know the science perfectly. They install such temples under regulative principles. Right? And he's saying such authorized acharyas, so they're doing it. Just to offer facilities to the common man. Right? So here, less intelligent doesn't mean they're not smart. Because yes, you will have those who don't have much academic brain making comments. But generally it's less. The unfortunate is those that do have academic brains. They'll make comments. So that's the point, but it's still, they're classified as less intelligent.
Yes.
Right? So, because supreme intelligence then is the Paramahamsas, who's always absorbed in the Lord. Less intelligent means not absorbed in the Lord. Does that make sense? So the point is just because you have an opinion doesn't, just because you have an opinion and a nose doesn't mean you can poke your nose. It's not your business. What's your position? The ladies got up on the roofs just to have a look at the procession of the Lord. The ladies did not mix with the crowd on the street, and thus their respectability was perfectly observed. Right? There was no artificial equality with man. Female respectability is preserved more elegantly by keeping the women separate from the man. The sexes should not mix unrestrictedly. Right? It's just like if you have, let's say you're going by a shop, right? And, it's very nicely arranged. There's hardly anything in the window. There may be nothing in the window. And you can see everything's much further at the back, okay? How does that shop compare to one where the shop's there, but then on the sidewalk, in the street where everybody walks, that's where they put the goods? Yeah. What's the difference between these two shops?
More exclusive.
More exclusive. Now, what about the front of the shop? You can't really see in.
It's darkened,
tinted. Yeah. But, the letters are in gold on it and all that. There's even more. Now, what if there's a guy with a gun standing at the door?
Bond speak.
Huh? Yeah. Then this is really.
This is where.
So you have respect. This is the point. You can't be on the street and have respect. You can't get both. It just doesn't work. You get one or the other. So the prostitutes, they're on the street, but they don't get the respect that the common woman does. The general women get. Right? They get their own respect for what they can do, but they don't get that respect. And the other ladies don't get the respect of the courtesans, right? You can't have both.
Yes.
Right? That's cheating.
Yes. Right.
Yes. Although the inhabitants of Dorka were accustomed to seeing the Lord daily, since he is a reservoir of all beauty, they were never satiated. Right? This is an important, actually very important aspect, because one might be in anxiety that it's said that you can't be satisfied in the material world. But then we read things like this, is that they are never satiated either. So neither in the material or the spiritual world you'd be satisfied. Right? But the difference is in the material world, even you get what you're looking for, it doesn't make you satisfied. I mean, it's not what you're looking for. So the not being satisfied here means you can't actually get what you want. In the spiritual world, you're getting what you want, you just want more of it. You understand? There's a difference there. So the spiritual not being satiated means that it's so good you could go on doing that forever. And they do. Well, here, even if you get everything that you say you want, it still doesn't do what you're looking for. Right. Does that make sense? Yes.
You mentioned that in females it's good to have the shyness aspect and satisfaction.
Yes.
So in regards to this whole summary here, we can't be satisfied, but we have to also be satisfied with what we get.
Yes, means in other words, it's what you have, be satisfied with it. Because the point is why do we have stuff? It's to be happy. Right? Feel secure. Right? Now, if we're going to put our emotion of happiness into the future, then what do we have now? Right? There is no security now. There is no happiness now, because it's when I get that, then I'll be happy. The problem is when the time comes, that moves forward quite quickly. And then it comes to where you are, and it will stay where you are for one moment. And then it's in the past. You already have it. Right? But do we hear people talking about how happy they are about something that they have? Unless they've got some, they can get something social out of it. You know what I'm saying?
Most of the time, it's anxiety. anxiety.
It's anxiety for what's coming in the future, because you put your you repose your faith there, that that will make me happy and secure. Satisfaction is being happy with what you have now. Then if you add in, you can increase that, great. So satisfaction means what I have now is great. Now if I get more, even better. You understand? The lack of satisfaction means I'll be happy when I get what I want. But once you have it, then I need something more. Because you always have to go, it's an ongoing, the need for happiness is an ongoing nature, right? It's the nature of the soul. So it's just where you place it. You know what I'm saying?
So in other words, be satisfied with what we get materially, but yes, that satisfaction can never fulfill the spiritual satisfaction.
Yes, it'll never fulfill the actual need of the soul. Yes. Yeah. But it'll take care of, you know, what's going on here. Although the inhabitants of Dwarka were accustomed to seeing the Lord daily, since he is the reservoir of all beauty, they were never satiated. The Lord's chest is the abode of the goddess of fortune. His moon-like face is the drinking vessel for eyes, which hanker after all that is beautiful. His arms are the resting place for the administrative demigods. And his lotus feet are the refuge of pure devotees, who never talk or sing of any subject except his lordship. 25 and 26. In his purport to 1.11.26, Srila Prabhupada writes that Lord Shri Krishna is always served by thousands and thousands of Lakshmis. His divine grace divides the human race into different categories. Some are interested only in gaining the favor of the goddess of fortune, but these goddesses of fortune, as Prabhupada points out, can be seen automatically if we are attracted by the bodily features of the Lord. In Bhagavad Sandarbha 1.103.4 and 5, Srila Jiva Goswami explains, the personality of Godhead himself describes the potency, Sri, the goddess of fortune, in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 3.16.7. Because I am the servitor of my devotees, my lotus feet have become so sacred that they immediately wipe out all sin. And I have acquired such a disposition that the goddess Sri does not leave me, even though I have no attachment for her, and others praise her beauty and observe sacred vows to secure from her a single slight favor. So here is that he says, even though I've acquired such a disposition that the goddess Sri does not leave me. So it's a matter of disposition. Because others are praising her beauty, observing vows, you know, they trying to get any kind of favor and all that. So in other words, they're approaching her. So that puts them in a attractive position to the goddess of fortune. But she doesn't leave the Lord because of his disposition. Right? Even though he's detached, you have no attachment for her. Right? But she doesn't go away because of the disposition. Because right? The way he nicely interacts, takes care. In other words, it's about the relationship. While these others, they put their attention towards her, but it's all about what they'll gain. It's not about actually the service. And here it's all this point about his lotus feet are the, how you say, can remove all sin because he's serving the devotees. You know, this is Krishna speaking. You know, so that's the element is that he's serving the devotees. So then, what does that mean? We have to do. We have to serve the devotees, and the devotees are the Lord's lotus feet. So the devotees are the Lord's lotus feet, and he's serving those devotees. So therefore, taking shelter of his lotus feet means taking shelter of the devotees. Padasevana means serving the lotus feet of the Lord means serving the devotees. Devotees and anything connected to the Lord, like serving the Dham, serving Tulsi, honoring Prashad, these are all Padasevana, the paraphernalia. At the end of the fourth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam 4.31.22, Sri Narada describes goddesses Sri in these words. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is self-sufficient, he becomes dependent on his devotees. He does not care for the goddess Sri, nor for the kings and demigods who are after the favors of goddess Sri. Where is that person who is actually grateful and will not worship the person? Where is that person who is actually grateful and will not worship the personality of Godhead? And so in other words, if someone's actually grateful, they'll always worship the Lord. Those who don't worship the Lord aren't grateful. Right? That would also explain that point before about, I think your question about not being. What was your question?
Okay.
Yeah, showing affection, because they're not grateful. You know, those who are grateful can show affection, those who are not can. The Supreme Personality of God Himself, oh no, we just did that one. In the purport to 111.26, Srila Prabhupada notes that impersonalists have no opportunity for the darshan of Goddess Sri because of their deliberate neglect of the spiritual form of her transcendental husband. So they aren't going to have any opulence. Another category, in other words, any opulence you do see them with, it's actually Maya. It's not Sri. Because Sri actually means opulence in connection with the Lord. Right? Dana Lakshmi, who everybody's with, that's the material form. So that binds you. So they might have that, but they never have Sri. Another category of humanity, the artists, whose minds are overtaken by the beauty of the material world, should better seek the lovely vision of the lotus face of the Lord. All that is beautiful in nature emanates from a smile, and all beautiful music is but specimens of his whispering voice. So anything of beauty, if it's in form, it's coming from it's coming from his smile, because there's nothing more beautiful than that. The sounds, then that's coming from his speaking. So it's all going back to him. So the artist should take everything back. A third category of man, the tiny human gods, who hold positions in state service. Funny. Tiny human god should take shelter of the mighty arms of the Lord, as do his sons, the demigods, directly empowered by him. Srila Prabhupada then compares the final and ultimate category of human beings, the devotees, to bees mad after the honey of Sri Krishna's lotus feet. The purport ends with his divine grace rendering a prayer by Srila Rupa Goswami, who compares himself to such a bee. O my Lord, I beg to offer my prayers unto you. My mind is like a bee, and it is after some honey. Kindly therefore give my bee mind a place at your lotus feet, which are the reservoirs of all transcendental honey. I know that even big demigods like Brahma do not see the rays of the nails of your lotus feet, even though they are engaged in deep meditation for years together. Still, O infallible one, my ambition is such, for you are very merciful to your surrendered devotees. O Madhava, I know also that I have no genuine devotion for the service of your lotus feet. But because your lordship is inconceivably powerful, you can do what is impossible to be done. Your lotus feet can deride even the nectar of the heavenly kingdom, and therefore I am very much attracted by them. O Supreme Eternal, please therefore let my mind be fixed at your lotus feet, so that eternally I may be able to relish the taste of your transcendental service. So we see here's that element of disqualification, but that disqualification does not in any way hamper their endeavor for gaining the Lord's mercy. Right? So when we say, oh, I'm so useless, and so I shouldn't be around devotees, I'm so sinful, I shouldn't take prasad, I shouldn't see the deep. This is just Maya. That's not actual humility, that's not actual devotion. It seems like it, but it's Maya's trick to get you to not do devotional service. Like we said before, it's Kali's trick to get you to think, oh, it's his age, so you can't do Lord Chaitanya's movement. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, because it's better if you catch that.
Okay.
You know, it's more powerful. Sudha Goswami continued, as Lord Krishna passed along the road, an umbrella protected his head from the sunshine, and peacock fans moved in semicircles, while showers of flowers fell upon the road. Right? So it says peacock fans moved in semicircles, right? It means they're going from up to down, because their purpose is to make a pleasant breeze, you know, for cooling and all that. It's not to, you know, too much of a show and all this kind of stuff. If we wanted to show, then we'd use the Chinese ones, because you can open them out and do all kinds of things with them and all that. But we're not. We're using the standard ones that they blow air. Right? Okay. Well, showers of flowers fell upon the road. Right? So that means people are on the road throwing, or from the houses they're throwing, or the demigods are raining, you know, so like this. With his bright yellow garments, it appeared as if a dark cloud was surrounded simultaneously by the sun, moon, lightning, and rainbows. Verse 27. Srila Prabhupada explains this imagery in his purport. The sun, moon, rainbow, and lightning do not appear in the sky simultaneously. When there is sun, the moonlight becomes insignificant. And if there are clouds and a rainbow, there is no manifestation of light. There is no manifestation of lightning. Right? So if you have clouds, right, then there's no sun or moon, right? And if there's lightning, there's no rainbow. And if there's a rainbow, there's no lightning. You understand? So each one cancels out the other. Right? If the moon, you can see the moon and appreciate the moon, there's no sun.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. The Lord's bodily hue is just like a new monsoon cloud. He is compared herein to the cloud. The white umbrella over his head is compared to the sun. The movement of the bunch hair fans of flukes is compared to the moon. Bunch hair fan of flukes. That's an interesting. Okay. The showers of flowers are compared to the stars. His yellow garments are compared to lightning. And the flower garlands on his chest are compared to a rainbow. So all these activities of the firmament, being impossible simultaneous factors, cannot be adjusted by comparison. The adjustment is possible only when we think of the inconceivable potency of the Lord. The Lord is all-powerful, and in His presence anything is, in His presence anything impossible can be made possible by His inconceivable energy. But, because the inconceivable energy is one of the energies. He's not saying His inconceivable energy meaning them all. It does on one, that one level, but there is an inconceivable energy that does just that.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But the situation created at the time of His passing on the roads of Dwarka was beautiful and could not be compared to anything besides the description of natural phenomena. Right? The Lord proceeded to His father's palace. His mothers, headed by Devaki, embraced Krishna, and in turn He offered His obeisances unto them by placing His head at their feet. Footnote 22. In the purport to 111.28, Srila Prabhupada lists seven kinds of mothers. The real mother, the wife of the spiritual master, the wife of a brahmana, the wife of the king, the cow, the nurse, and the earth. The verse states that all of the different mothers present, the verse states that of all the different mothers present, Devaki was his real mother. Yeah. So in the Vedic culture, the term mother is held in good respect and esteem. Right? Amongst the tribals, not necessarily. When the mothers sat Krishna upon their laps, milk began to flow from the breasts due to intense parental affection. And the tears from their eyes wetted his body. 28, 29. Yes.
And I think Krishna was 125 years, no? At that time? After
Krishna. Yes, he would be around then. It would be up in at least, you know,
so the mother.
120s. And yeah, his point is his moms are moms. It doesn't change. Like that. So that's why it's brought out. Because the rasa, it's consistent. That aspect is consistent. You know, that's why it's said it's the closest you get in the material world to the actual love in the spiritual world, because it's consistent. You know, it's intense, it's full, it's consistent, like that. Well, anything else goes up and down, but that one's, you know, very stable.
Mark?
Yes.
Plus, he doesn't look 120 like we do.
No, he didn't, and neither did they. So it's not going to be one of those scenes that you wish you could unsee.
Yeah. Lose your appetite.
Huh?
You lose your appetite.
Yeah. Yes. Verses 30 to 39. Lord Krishna is greeted by the queen. So, in other words, he's been greeted by everybody, and then he goes in. Because the point is you could say, no, but you know, why the ladies have to be in the house? Why can't they go out on the street? But the point is the interaction that the ladies actually are desiring can't be done on the street. And if it is done on the street, that's called dogs, right? You know, humans, then they have... So here, then he goes into the palace, then it's their place. Now they can act as they like. See, the whole point is it's not a problem of acting how you like, it's that know where you can act how you like. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's the point. You know, just like, you know, yeah.
Yes. Okay.
In this section, so it gets more and more intimate as we see. Like that. And so now it's come to the mothers, now it'll go to the queens. In this section, Sudha Goswami describes the transcendental character of the Lord and the spiritual nature of Krishna's relationships with his queens. In chapter 10, the ladies of Hastinapur glorify the great fortune of the queens of Dwarka. Now, at the end of chapter 11, we are given an opportunity to relish the transcendental sweet intricacies of Krishna's dealings with those queens. Sudha Goswami said, "Thereafter, the Lord entered his palaces, which were perfect to the fullest extent. His wives lived in them, and they numbered over 16,000. After his long absence, his beloved queens were beside themselves with joy upon singing him. Roused from their meditations, they instantly stood up from their cushioned seats, shyly covering their faces, as was the social custom." Stood up from the cushioned seats, because the seat, that means, as we remember from Manu, the seat and the bed of the women, that's theirs. It's very important to them. Right? So that it mentions they got up from the cushioned seats, because that means they weren't just sitting somewhere, but they were at their place where they really liked to be. It's their seat. It's cushioned. It's just the way they like it. They were getting up from that. So then that's... Yeah. And even though we see that they are, how you say, besides themselves with joy, then they are shyly covering their faces as a social custom. Right? So it's not just because it's a rule, it's just the natural expression. Because when so much energy comes, then the natural thing is to control it. You know what I'm saying? It's just the way it works. You know, it's just deep. In his purport to 111.31, Srila Prabhupada sweetly explains the transcendental miracle of Sri Krishna's intimacy with the 16,108 wives, each of whom dwelt in her own splendid palace. As mentioned above, notice that it's not just palace, it's splendid palace. Because otherwise, if it's a, you know what I'm saying, if it was ticky-tacky, you know. In other words, Krishna wouldn't have been able to do this in San Francisco. No. It just would not have worked, right? Everybody's got their own same house, it would not have worked. Right? So everyone has splendid, so unique, special. Right? So that's why she's not going away. Right? As mentioned above, the Lord entered his home palaces occupied by 16,108 queens. This means that the Lord at once expanded himself in as many plenary expansions as there were queens in palaces, and entered in each and every one of them simultaneously and separately. Right? So when he goes to the mothers, there's only one person. When he's with all the citizens, he's only one person. Right? So he's affording this uniqueness, this specialness to the queens. Right? That makes sense. Yeah, I mean, wouldn't you stay with a guy who he could hang out at home and go to the work simultaneously? You definitely want to. That's a keeper, right? That's good. Right? Yeah. You know, and at the same time, he can be out mowing the lawn, right? Yeah. So it's all that. Yeah. Yes.
So when he leaves the house, then he becomes one again?
Yeah, yeah. It says he's walking down, and because you're going to one place, wherever they are, when they come to the road where two roads meet, then the two Krishnas become one, and then they walk to another one, and like that, until finally when he enters the assembly hall, then there's only one Krishna. You know, but then as he comes out, then it, you know, he goes back again. Because his quarters are all in one place, in the center of the city. The Brahmastan, then that's... Generally, it's an open area, but the deities can be there. So then Krishna, his natural place for his place, is in the center. Right? While the other groups will all be around the center. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like Sri Rangam. Deities in the center, and then all the streets are around that. So you have seven streets around, and then everybody lives in... They do it quarters by streets, not by dividing the area into quarters. You know? Like that. Here is another manifestation of the feature of his internal potency. He can expand himself in as many forms of spiritual identity as he desires, even though he is one without a second. One should not, therefore, become astonished to learn that the Lord married so many wives. On the contrary, one should affirm that even if the Lord marries 16,000 million wives, he is not completely manifesting his unlimited and inexhaustible potency. You know, so we're boggled enough at 16,108, so we leave it at that. But you know, if that was more common, then yes, then he'd have 16,000 million wives. He married only 16,000 wives and entered in each and every one of the different palaces just to impress in the history of the human beings on the surface of the earth that the Lord is never equal to or less than any human being. Right? He's not less than them, but no one is equal to him. Right? However powerful he may be, right, whoever this human being is, no one therefore is either equal to or greater than the Lord. The Lord is always great in all respects. God is great, is eternal truth.
Asam
urdhva. Asam urdhva. Yeah. Sama means equal, and urdhva means above. The purport ends with a summary of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's fivefold analysis of the psychology displayed by the queens during this reunion with the Lord. According to Yajnavalkya's religious injunctions, a woman whose husband is away from home should not take part in any social functions, should not decorate her body, should not laugh, and should not go to any relative's house in any circumstance. It means this laugh means all these out social kind of things, right? At the same time, is it also enjoined that the wife should never present herself before the husband in an unclean state. She must decorate herself with ornaments and a good dress and should always be present before the husband in a happy and joyous mood. According to Sri Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, there was a regular psychological reaction on the occasion. First of all, rising from their seats, although they wanted to see their husband, they were deterred because of feminine shyness. But due to strong ecstasy, they overcame that stage of weakness and became caught up with the idea of embracing the Lord. And this thought factually made them unconscious of their surrounding environment. This prime state of ecstasy annihilated all other formalities and social conventions, and thus they escaped all stumbling blocks on the path of meeting the Lord. And that is the perfect stage of meeting the Lord of the soul, Sri Krishna. And so in other words, the feminine elements come up, but because of that attachment to Krishna, then even that went away. So all those obstacles even became removed. Right? So that's why we're mentioning before, Dwarka is that it's spontaneous devotional service, but just it has these. Its basis is the rules, right? Vrindavan is not the rules like that. Here the basis rules. Hesitatingly taking in the wonderful sight of the Lord with their coy glances. Right? So even though it says it gave up the shyness as an obstacle, it doesn't mean that the feminine nature of contrary and elusive isn't remaining. Right? The bashful queens, first of all, embraced Krishna in the innermost core of their hearts. As their love for him unburdened itself from its initial restraint, they embraced him visually. Next, they sent their sons to embrace him. As the most cultured of women, they tried to restrain themselves, yet at last the wives of Lord Krishna could not help but freely shed tears of joy upon seeing him after such a lengthy separation. Sutta Goswami rhetorically asked the sages, what woman, having had the fortune of seeing the Lord's lotus feet, can be detached from them? 32 and 33. So, in other words, the details of all this we'll get into when we get to the 10th canto. Because then we'll appreciate more. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, does that make sense? Because otherwise we can discuss more on some of these things, but whether at this point we would get the best from it. Right? So you see is that very internal that can't be seen, then by the visual, then because there's interaction, there can be contact at that point. Then sending the sons, there's the dynamic interaction. Right? Then only then you can see the tears. Because the point is the more is known, the more the other person can take a superior position. That's the other way. There's the idea, the woman's in control, she can do what he wants, but that element of being in control, doing what she wants, she actually loses her control. Because then other people know what she looks like, how she behaves. So they're in control. Because now they can talk about her, interact with her according to that. You understand? So it reverses. So that's why these things are slow to come out. Because that surrender means then that's giving up of that aspect. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, but all these we can say before because of Krishna having the disposition. Right? So Krishna has that disposition, therefore this manifests nicely. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur reveals the subtleties of the loving dealings between Krishna's queens. Krishna entered each of the palaces of the queens simultaneously in many forms. When each saw him, they thought, Krishna has come to me first. Right? Important.
Yes.
Right? But it's not a trick, because he has come to them first. But she's, you understand? So the point is, it's not just clever, tricks that the men get together and discuss, and like that, It's just, it's the actual principle. Seeing them in an unkept state because of separation, he became more affectionate to them. So they're not taking care of themselves, addressing themselves well because of this. So it says one should dress nicely. So one should think, then when knowing the husband's coming, she should dress up. No, but Manu mentions, no, she remains in that state. She's not unclean. The point is she shouldn't be unclean, but it's not she's unkept. It's two different things. You're wearing clean clothes and that. You're just not making the effort to dress up nicely. It's like, what do you call it? Sweatpants and a t-shirt, right? Oops, excuse me. They do that when the husband's around. Sorry. So then the husband knows this is how she's been keeping herself. Right? So there, that increases his affection, because why is she doing that? Out of affection for him. So naturally that would increase his affection. Now if he just takes it for granted, I'm so great, then it's not going to happen again. But because of the disposition, therefore, that's how it always works. It's reciprocal. There's no such thing as, that's what they have to do. They do that because of what you're doing. And you do what you're doing because of what they're doing. That's how interactions work. First, they embraced him with their eyes filled with desire. This is enjoyment through the eyes. Having him enter within the holes of their eyes, they embraced him with their subtle body, antar atmana, because they did not want others to understand what they were doing. Because right? There's others there. It means it's not just the two of them. We're not talking about, a nuclear family here, with nothing. We're talking about maidservants or others or like this. So there's many people there. But seeing that their most clever husband understood what they were doing, they became embarrassed. Right? Because he can tell by the subtleties of what's happening. So that means he has that subtlety. So that you can understand, then they feel he understands. So it's important that the husband is aware and can be able to understand the moods like that. Right? And though they stop the tears from flowing in their eyes, some tears flowed anyway beyond their control. Or best of the Bhrigu dynasty. No soul can be satisfied, right? So of the best of the Bhrigu dynasty. So that would be Shaunaka, no? No soul can be satisfied unless he attains some position in the Lord's service. It is necessary that we understand this. The Supreme Lord appears in this world to attract the living entities into taking part in such relationships as the one he displayed in Dwarka with his queens. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to 1.11.34, in order to express the unimpeded nature of his love for the queens, another type of activity lacking that excitement is described. Next. The Lord was pacified after killing those kings who were burdensome to the earth. They were puffed up with their military strength, their horses, elephants, chariots, infantry, etc. He himself was not a party in the fight. He simply created hostility between the powerful administrators, and they fought amongst themselves. He was like the wind which causes friction between bamboos and so sparks a fire. 34, Srila Prabhupada explains. Right? In other words, when one comes up, you do the other one to, one, show the comparison, but create the balance. Yes.
about these ladies and shinies. It's not a specific question, but I would like, I mean, the general question, I would like you to explain a bit. There's a letter, probably you're familiar with, the letter from Srila Prabhupada to four ladies, distributors. And I just read a few lines, not the whole thing. Regarding the problem of how to be aggressive on Sankirtan and submissive in the temple, my request to you is that you should go on being aggressive on Sankirtan. And then Srila Prabhupada writes also, of course it is good that you are concerned about being chaste, shy, and submissive among your good brothers. Then he says, if you are completely aggressive on Sankirtan, there should be no material aggressiveness and pride remaining. You have to distinguish between devotees and non-devotees. So if you could elaborate.
But that doesn't have the, what is it? The lion in the chase and then something else at home.
Lamb.
Huh? A lamb at home. That's not in that purport? In that letter?
That's in the conversation.
Oh, that's in the conversation. Okay. Same kind of principle. Means one has to be able to distinguish here. Because if you're dealing with the cultured and the uncultured just how you're, means the general dealings amongst them is regular. So it's not seen otherwise. You need it more blunt. Means, if you're dealing with malechas and yavanas, in dealing with malechas and yavanas, how malechas and yavanas interact, they just take that as normal. But that's not the interaction between devotees. So one has to be able to discriminate. That's the whole point. Is that intelligence is one of the feminine qualities, as mentioned in Gita. And intelligence means to discriminate. So the quality of to know who you can deal how, that's very important. Right? So if they can't make that discrimination, then that's not actually appropriate, a culture. Because the lady does do that anyway. Even if she's sitting there, there's a room full of people, she'll deal with each of them differently. So then why not in general between the non-devotees and the devotees? You know what I'm saying? So those are natural because you are in a human environment, so you can act as a human. When you're in an animal environment, then no one minds, you know, how you say, animal-esque. You know, does that make sense? You know, you keep the more cultured side of the animal, and so then they're happy with that. So it's just, one has to be able to make that distinction. Ladies like making that distinction. You say, no, but it should all be the same. Then that was either not said by a woman, or it was not said by someone who understands what a woman is, and I'm counting those in female bodies. You know, it's not because someone's in a female body, they know what a woman is. It's not automatic. You know? So the principle comes up is that one has to learn. That's why training is there. That's why Prabhupada mentions and gives these purports so that one starts to understand. Because people are looking for rasa and interaction and taste. This is how it's gained. If you don't use these methods, you won't gain it. So therefore, there's a difference in the two. And the point is you're also dealing, it's not necessarily generic, because in India you didn't see this. Because in India, means the ladies generally weren't out on the street, they don't have to be aggressive. In India, the men respect women, so a woman could walk up to him, if you wanted to distribute books, could walk up to a man, and in a regular, feminine, you know, cultured way, then, you know, present books and do stuff like that. So it's very different, but very few were doing here, like that. So it's different. When you're dealing with first generation in the West, you're dealing with those, you know, who are converted animals. So therefore, working in that environment is not such a difficulty. The difficulty, they're not complaining about the aggressiveness, they're complaining about the dealing in the temple. That's the hard one. Because they're not saying, well, I'm a devotee, so, you know, and then, but it's so difficult to go out on the street and be aggressive. They're saying, you know, we're out on the street, we're aggressive, it's so hard to come back to the temple and not be aggressive. We have to also understand what we're dealing with here. So this is not a generic, you know, thing describing all ladies at all times, all places, and all circumstances. It's specific for that. And, you know, those ladies, they're heavy ladies. You know, we're not talking about, you know, general ladies. Even amongst ladies, those are heavy ladies. Like that. So it's just a matter of applying it that still it fits within the feminine mentality to be able to deal in different situations in a different way. That's how you get taste. That's how you get variety. You deal the same in all situations. That's the problem. That's what the men tend to do. That's what upsets the women. They don't distinguish and change how they deal in each different situation. You know, when he's at home, the wife says, hey, do this or do that or don't do this, do that. When they're out in public, she doesn't say anything. She just looks at him. And then, you know, he's going, what? You know, and it's kind of like, you know, now you've said it and then everybody looks and then he's expecting an answer and then she gets more upset. And then, you know, well, what's wrong? You know, it makes it worse. So that's the problem, is because they're not distinguishing between the two. So this whole thing is that we're women, we can't distinguish. That's totally bogus. Absolutely, totally bogus. It just, it doesn't, if it's like that, that means they don't even are aware of their own feminine nature. Because they still act in that way. The heaviest, nastiest, stinkiest, smelliest woman still acts like a woman. There's no question. Doesn't matter. She's, you know, she's a lesbian. She's got a Harley. You know, she's got a butch. She's got tats. It doesn't matter. She still will behave like a woman. It's just you can't change that. They can say, but it just doesn't change. If you know feminine and masculine, you can point it out. You just have to know what it is. So you have to know the science. So the idea is to know, okay, this works for them in that situation. This is Prabhupada's trying to tell them how to balance it. But you'll find, like let's say in India, you know, you never hear really of the ladies going out and distributing books. It's not that Prabhupada is saying to do it. It's not that anyone is coming to Prabhupada to ask if they should do it. It just doesn't really happen. And even here you do, it works very nicely. You just go around and culture and it works nice. And even if you want to take, means those who could do in a different way did. I remember when there was one couple. They used to do their Sankirtan on the subways during rush hour. You know, that's when they specialize, just in the morning up and then back down. They go with their kid. You know, so they'd all dress up as devotees, they'd all go in there and they had the kid and all this and that, and then, you know, they get on there and in typical New York fashion. They just, you know, start making announcement. Okay, we're here, we're devotees, we're doing this and that, we got this book, we got all these things and that, this is my wife, you know, this is her name, this is my kid, you know, this and that, this is what we do, and all this, and introduce themselves, did a whole, like, kind of family scene, and then when they were finished, then they just went down, you know, the two sides of the thing and distributed books. So they did it as a family, keeping the family mood. And that's in New York. And it wasn't that they didn't do it as New Yorkers. They were bold. They just didn't. We're here, you know. We're here. We're a family. We're Hare Krishnas. You have to be a New Yorker to do that. You know? That's the problem. The people that are saying, oh, we can't do this, we can't talk like that, they're not from New York. They're from New York. Hey, what's the problem? We're doing this. You're not doing this? What's wrong with you? You know? That's New York. Right? So they did. They could do that. So the point is, you can work within that conditioning and still maintain the culture. You just have to know how to do it. You have to know where the line is. You know? Because even in the Western culture, you take it in its, you know, in its, you know, the extreme elements of its forms. There's technically a rule that amongst the karmis, the married men and women can flirt with each other, but they just can't do anything. That's why in the social function, they try to mix it up. When you put places where seats, you put it so that everybody will talk and interact and do all that. Formal settings, it's supposed to be man, woman, man, woman, man, woman. And then opposite the man is the woman, you know, and then that's in the same. So in front of you, you know, is the opposite and on the two sides of you. So that means, you know, plenty of opportunity to talk. And for them, it's the same. So at least between three ladies or three men, somebody's going to start a conversation. You know, and you can even allude to things as long as it's on a joking level and you don't do anything. If you become sick, then that's wrong. Then you've stepped over the line. So the point is they can toe that line. So then why, if the line's somewhere else? Because there's people that won't do that. So you pull that back a little. It's just where you put the line. Point is this point of not crossing the line. That's there in every society. So it's not exclusive to us. We're the how you say, you know, the guys that have
line masters.
Yes, you know, issues. You know, we still keep our means. If we used coat hangers, we would keep them in our shirts when we put them on. We wouldn't take them out. Right, you know. No? You know, so it's not like that, you know. Only Lawrence Welk could get away with that, right? You know, so the idea is that one has to understand what is the thing, because the problem in the letters is you don't know what the letter was. You don't know what the question was. You don't know their attitude, what was approach, and all that. You can get a general idea and apply it into other things that are there from the books. But to take them on their own, opposed to the books, that can never be done. Prabhupada said it's not to be done. The books are the authority. And then this is to refine that, you know, in specific situations. Or does that work? Okay. You know what I'm saying? But we have to understand is that those, even amongst ladies, there's only a few that do that. You know, I'm saying, if you take it now, out of, you know, hundreds of thousands of ladies in the movement, how many are feeling that things aren't, you know, appropriate for them as women? Right? There's a few talking about it, a few more that feel like that, and then there's the balance is just the regular ladies not being satisfied with anything in the material world because you can't be. You know. In other words, those are the realistic ones. The other ones are not actually realistic. They're the ones that claim they're being real. But they're the ones that are not real. We're not just saying this from that. We're just saying this from the science of the masculine and feminine principle. Because the point is if you're talking about, what do you call it? Contrary and elusive as inherent feminine qualities that you can't get rid of. So that means what they're talking about generally is the opposite of what they want. So they'll say, no, this is not what they want. No woman wants a man she can control completely. She wants one that she has a shot at. But if she can completely control him, what's the use? What's the point? So he has to be more powerful. And so the methods they're using are to break down that. But that's what women do anyway. The normal thing is traditionally the women did all these things in the house to their husbands. Now they're out on the street, everybody's got to be their husband. Everybody's got to take that feminine, intense feminine heat. And they think it's their right. They have zero right. No man has to take that from any woman but her wife, but his wife. And no woman can claim she has that right. It's not her business. So the thing is though there's elements to be considered, the whole approach and the whole premise is totally wrong. We're talking science here. We're not talking, you know, yeah, kind of, you know, I say,
mental issues.
Yeah, this kind of masculine superiority thing. We're just talking what women are. No woman wants a man weaker than her. Right? She may talk that she does, she may talk all these things, but that's what women do. They always talk opposite of what they want. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, oh, we didn't have, you know, it's like a, You know, every night we, we never go out. You know, the guy's thinking, we just went out 2 days ago. You know, like that, you know. Like that. She's not going to say, you know, I was just thinking just as that, you know, we went out the other night, that was nice, and then we're here, and then, you know, we have the opportunity, and so then we could go out again. No, they're going to say, we never go out. You know? And then if he says, you know, but we just went out 2 days ago, wrong answer. Then she turns around and walks off. Right? You know, she didn't go, oh yeah, thank you for reminding me. You know? Then if he goes, oh, okay, so where would you like to go? And then she'll say, well, I don't know, you know, wait. She knows exactly where she wants to go. You know? And so then he sort of say, well, you know, okay, you know, so then we could go here. Well, no, that's kind of this. Okay, you know, instead of, you know, and then, you know, well, you know, instead of saying, well, but then you choose. No, she had already said she wants him to go through the thing, right? So then, okay, we could go here. Yeah, no, but we went there last time. And it says, okay, well, then let's see, what else is good? We went there. Oh, we always go there. Okay, let's see, let's do different. Okay, what about this place? Yes. You know, she could have just come in and when he came and just say, hey, don't take your coat off, or, you know, we're heading out. You know.
And where she wanted it
gone. Yeah, he could have done that, but it doesn't. So that's just feminine nature. It's just the way it works. And so for the women to say that it doesn't. That, you know, we can do all these things, we want all this control and everything like that. But the point is they want this, the control that they're complaining about is the same control they apply. Like that. Means that, let's say you have a bunch of women at a job. The woman boss, there's no one heavier than a woman boss. So unless you like the woman boss, you just don't stay there. Man, he doesn't like his boss, okay, he can still stay there 20 years. Woman, that's it. She can't stay at the job. They're much heavier. So all the things you talk, all the men are this, the men are that, that's exactly what they'll do if they're in charge. Exactly. Not different. Not even one bit different. Otherwise, why would they be saying it? So that's the whole thing, is that it's all this stuff is just a trick. It's just a smokescreen. It's not real. You know what I'm saying? There's elements that are real. Yes, men don't behave properly, they need to be trained. But the solutions that are being presented aren't the ones. Yes.
Would you say that women will, as they are married and grow older, will be wiser and maybe communicate their needs and wants better to their husbands?
Naturally, as they go and they develop a companionship, because that's the thing in the marriage ceremony. When they're actually married, the first point the husband says is, "Be my companion for life." He doesn't say, be my lover, be my this, but he says, be my companion, because that's the thing you can cultivate. So as that companionship is cultivated, then naturally, over time, the things have been explained, not at one time. You know, it's every now and again something very direct and real will be said. The man's smart, he collects all those and remembers them, right? And if he's not smart, he thinks that was for that moment. Right, you know, so that, those are all the things. Krishna has the disposition. He remembers them all. Right? So then just as you go, then the two of them become, basically you can say, the best of friends, because they know each other so well, they can cooperate so well, so then their working together as a team is very strong. So that's the natural position. And that's the position then on the spiritual platform of Vanaprastha. Because then they cooperate and like that. Does that make sense? So it's natural. And then when you have that class of trained woman who has gone through that, then she can train the next generation what actually to look for. In other words, you want this from the men, you're just not going to get it. Right? We're in the material world, they just don't have it. So don't look for that. This you can look for. You know, you can push here, but don't push there because it's not there. It's in the storybooks, but the storybooks end and they lived happily ever after. It doesn't actually tell how they lived happily ever after, what they did. Never. There isn't a book.
Romeo and Juliet. Kelly.
Yeah, well, they're dead. So that works even better, right? You know. Yeah.
You're talking about the women are not allowed to, or designed to show power. over men that you're not married to, or men in the...
Oh, it means if they're not your men, you have no right to show the power.
If you feel that they're pushing...
That you can do. But that's just to protect yourself, but yeah. Not that you have the generic right to control. That's just like, where does that come from? Just like the men don't have a right to control the women. The women belong to somebody. It's not your business.
So you're allowed to set your boundaries?
Yeah, of course. That you have to do. Yeah. That's the whole point. You have to set the boundaries. So that's the whole point. It's just being able to... No, this is the question that comes. Is that where the boundaries are in the association of devotees and when you're dealing with the karmis are different. Like that. Because for the karmis, you know, just saying, you know, hi, how are you, and they don't even know you, it's just normal. You know? Like when you're walking down the street, you can walk down the, you know, street in India, you know, for days, all day, and no one will come up to you and say, hi, how are you? You know, it just doesn't happen. If they do, then you got a problem. You know? But in the West, people, you're just standing there waiting for the light. Hey, well, you know, they just start talking. You know, are you on the bus? You're on this and that. So, you know, just people are congenial. They interact. They're not congenial, then no one interacts. And if you're in an elevator, that's tough. You know? That's why actually they develop faster elevators. It's not because people are really worried about the time taken. It's just they can't handle being in the elevator with someone you don't talk to for... You know, so long. Right?
That's why they have music, elevator.
Oh,
music.
That, yeah, music. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That makes sense? Yeah. So the point is it's very scientific and it answers all questions, but one has to be open to discussing it. If one is going to be dogmatic about it, then there's no... Because the point is any point of where it says how... anybody should behave, you can discuss it and say why. You know, but it's not about, you know, oh, we're not willing to discuss that. That's what you can do with your own men. The woman can do that with her own men. The husband says, why this? I'm not discussing it. She can do that. She can't do that with other men. You can't be having a meeting, a management meeting, and she feels she can pull that off. You know, I've seen women try to do it, and you don't let them do it, and they run out of the room crying because they couldn't control the situation. And we're talking heavy women here, actual good managers. You know? Because the thing is it's just there's certain things that you can't do. So just like the men shouldn't do certain things, women can't do certain things. It's just we're talking equality. It's yes. Then do the whole thing. But here it's not about equality, it's about just all in favor of the women and then you know, that's why. And then the more it goes that way, the less and less the women are satisfied. And then they think of more extreme ways to. So that's why you have to use the science, because otherwise then it just becomes, how do you say it? It becomes useless. It doesn't function. Okay. Is that okay? Okay, so we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Prabhupada ki jai, samaveta bhakti vrinda ki jai, jai nitai gaur ki jai.